From Mothman and Nessie to the spirit that haunts your home, welcome to Bob After Dark, a podcast about legends, lore, and the supernatural. So turn your lights down and your volume up and enjoy your trip to the shadows.
Hey there, children of the night, and welcome to Bob After Dark, the show that takes you into the shadows and goes and says hello to everything that goes bump in the night. I'm your host with the most that enjoys toast, Bob, and alongside of me, as always, is my ever-wonderful, ever-vampiric, ever-cape-wearing, and forever the heartthrob of Bob After Dark, my friend, my producer, my buddy, Count Panic himself. Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hi, Bob. Yes, here we are. Summer solstice in full swing.
Yes.
Time for another episode of Bob After Dark. The veil
is thinned. Yes.
That's thinnest.
I decided to wear my summer best today. Not summer vest with a V, but summer best with a B as in Bob.
Hawaiian shirt Bob.
Yeah, I'm busted out a newer Hawaiian shirt I don't think I've ever wore before.
Mummy this.
They're skeleton pirates.
Skeleton, but it looks kind of like it's wrapped in
okay,
mummy.
Fine. It's like a mummy pirate, then.
Mummy
skeleton pirate.
Mummies, there's some skeletons. There's
here,
some
let mummies. Me, I'll show off my drip. Is that what the youth call it?
Yeah.
So there's the
shirt.
See? There's my Wonder Woman transformation scene.
Look at that.
Yeah, I there we go. I'm back on camera.
Hawaiian shirt Bob.
Yeah, it's all, as you there, see skeleton pirate there.
Yeah.
As I was saying before on when you were bringing it up last week, on the podcast, you're like, it's almost time for a Hawaiian shirt, Bob.
And we got them this week.
Yes, and there you have it.
How many Hawaiian shirts does Bob have? More than four?
I have more than four, but less than 10.
Okay. Like for maybe one for each day of the week.
Maybe.
Seven?
Close to it.
Yeah.
Close to it. Definitely close to that.
Wow. What a time to be alive.
Look, man, and the fact that they make, like, I've found more and more spooky, like,
Hawaiian shirts
like this, it's like, that's the aesthetic, man, for the hot weather, you know?
Yeah. And sure, it has been hot here, that's for sure.
But yes.
Happy to be back here, Bob.
It's happy to be back here in the nice, cool studio.
Yeah.
Let's get your weekend update, Count.
Had a good one. You know, like I said, summertime out there, so we're just kind of vibing. Vampires and the... But see, the thing is, I have a black cape. You know how black attracts the sun more soft.
We need to get a Hawaiian print cape.
I need a Hawaiian cape.
I'm sure if I saw... had Vix start looking into that. She could find it because she finds everything.
There's got to be Hawaiian capes out there.
I'm sure she could find one. What's a Hawaiian vampire?
Hawaiian vampire.
A Hawaiian shirt vampire, you know? Vampire on vacation. What's that aesthetic?
Oh, man. I don't know. Like a Bloody Mary? I don't know.
There is a subgenre in like the goth lifestyle, the fashion sense. It's called Tropagoth.
Tropagoth.
That's like a subsection of like the goth world.
For tropical.
But more tropical. So like Hawaiian shirts, then you kind of put on like a, you know, some...
Is it kind of like that Portlandia sketch where the goths go to the beach and see Glenn Danzig? I don't know.
Yeah.
Kind of like that. But, you know...
hey, look, man.
It's got to be hot for those goths sometimes.
They want to be comfortable and enjoy themselves too. As Vix would say, there's nothing wrong with bringing a pumpkin to the beach.
I've never seen that before, but I'll keep my eyes open for sure.
Absolutely. So, would you like to know my weekend update?
How are you doing?
Yeah, you know, I went to my first show since surgery. Like, not my first show, but like my first real sit down and work the weekend show. I was, I didn't go super far just in case of, you know, medical stuff, but I was up in Grand Rapids for the JFAX is the convention I was at this weekend. Me and Vix went.
Nice.
And it was Grand Rapids is a gore. You ever been?
Never been.
Grand Rapids was a lovely town, absolutely stunning
city.
Is
it grand?
I would say it was grand. We, Vix went to two antique stores. I went to went to one, but kind of rushed through it to get what I was looking for, that she found for me. It was a lot of fun. The place is absolutely stunning. Where we stayed at and like kind of got our dinners for the nights. It was a really like interesting, like, I don't want to say like a hipstery neighborhood, but like, you know, kind of like that low key artsy kind of neighborhood. We got these lovely bagels in the morning for breakfast. That was good. It was a good way to feel like getting back into the swing of things slowly and surely after, you know, after enduring medical stuff. It wasn't like, you know, big mega, you know, breaking show, but this was a good time.
It sounds like a good time, Bob.
Yes.
And how did you felt good during it?
I had some issues, but it, like I said, for something like this, it was a lot slower. The cons, you know, it's not like a, you know, 20,000-30,000 person show or above. So it was a good way just to kind of like ease my way back into getting some live stuff done, you know. But it was a good time. I had a blast.
There you go. See?
Now I'm back.
Sounds fun.
And if this is your first time ever watching or listening to Bob After Dark, we are your weekly-ish show where we talk about legends, lore, and the supernatural, things that go bump in the night, lights in the sky, weird cryptid stories, and of course, Count Panic's favorite thing to do at the beach that's not swim.
Oh, man. What about build a sandcastle?
Well, that's a classic, man. That's a classic.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm not big. The sand gets in my cape too often. That's why I need to figure
man,
out.
Man, and it just gets everywhere, don't it?
And the water is always freezing up until, what, like September. You finally get some decent temperature water. But, yeah, I guess, you know, we'll go with sandcastles. Bob, how about you?
Yes.
Are you a type that builds sandcastles, Bob?
I've built them in the past. Can I tell you? I'll tell you a funny story. My mom at home is going to laugh at this. Yeah. She knows where this is going. So as a wee lad, you know, I grew up on the beach. Literally, grew up 5 minutes away from Mohalla Beach.
Well,
so
you lived in a home.
I lived in a home, yes, but like I lived on beachfront property, and by that I mean Whiting, Indiana, literally the city on the lake.
Yep.
And we had a beach, and we went there quite a bit as a kid. I don't go too much these days because, you know, beaches. But I was a wee lad, and Mom took me to the beach, you know, and I was digging a hole, right? And I dig this massively big hole. And at the time, somebody came up to me like, oh, little boy, what are you digging a hole for? And I deadpan looked at them and said, I'm looking for Bernie.
Bernie?
Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh, okay. That movie, classic.
Yes, Weekend at Bernie's 2 took place on, like, an island, and there was, like, the beach resort and stuff.
Yep, yeah.
And they, at one point, buried Bernie in the sand or something, and that's what I said I was looking for. Deadpan, like, you know, that's what I did.
Did
my mom's laughing right now. What's that?
Did they say anything to you? Like,
I don't remember. I couldn't tell you.
Disturbed or something.
Yes. Count, there's people saying there's some issues with the sound on the Jed TV app. But,
the Jed TV.
But some, it's just Norm, which is surprising because he's my tech guy.
Yeah.
By the way, Vic said Fratelli's Pizza, by the way, is where we got dinner one night.
Fratelli's Pizza?
Fratelli's, like as in the Goonies villains.
But it was named after?
No, I think that was just coincidence. But it was
you might own
pizza.
It now.
Yeah, absolutely. But anyway, Count, it's super awesome to be here with you live. And, you know, Bob After Dark, we split the show up into two parts, right? So the first part of the show is the weird spooky news of the week. That's where you, the fans, and me, the Bob, go scouring the internet for any kind of new spooky news, anything from cryptid sightings, ghost sightings, alien pictures, UFO pictures, UAP photos, cryptid encounters, or weird advances in science that borderline on science fiction. I have three stories this week that I got from, you know, that I was able to track down, and none of them are from Coast to Coast AM, Tim Banal is going to be worried about me
because
I'm not writing his coattails.
Yeah.
So are you ready to dive in?
Ready to dive in, Bob.
Now, folks that are watching on the Jed TV app, either on the computer or TV or whatever, Count's going to put up a picture of our first one from the ladbible.com. Can you bring up that photo?
See.
Excellent.
Yeah, right,
and we'll leave that up for you guys to look at while I read this article. This is from Lucy Devine at the LABible.com or the LADBible.com. A bizarre ring appeared over Yulin, China. Locals have been left perplexed after spotting what appears to be a hovering circle in the sky. The odd phenomenon appeared above Yulin in the Shanbi region of the Shaanxi province, China, on June 17th and resembles a dark, smoky ring sitting midair. Ever since it appeared, many have been looking for an explanation as to what it actually is. Experts looking into the strange occurrence believe that it could be a ring of smoke or condensed water caused by combustion. These types of smoke rings can often appear to hover in the air due to pressure changes in the atmosphere. Another possible reason could be insects, which sometimes garner in huge numbers in order to reproduce. Some think it's going to be some sort of firework display or explosion. A similar dark ring was spotted at in Leamington Spa in 2014, and it was actually found to be caused by fireworks at Warwick Castle. Mr. Qiao, which Q-I-A-O, who took the video of the rings over the Chinese city, said he hoped someone would be able to explain the circle and how it happened. He said, "I looked up, saw the black ring rising to the sky very slowly. There were several of these rings. I don't know what they were, so I took a video of them. I'm hoping somebody can explain it." A few years ago, security footage in the UK captured an eerie black ring floating in the sky. The clip, which was shared on TikTok by user Farm Mama Life, showed the ring hovering almost motionless with wisps of smoke emanating from within. Many people commented to ask what was going on, with some wondering whether it was a, and I quote, portal to another dimension, or even an, and I quote, a portal from all anime worlds coming to Earth. After one appeared in the UK near Brickenshaw and on the M62 a few years back, a UFO investigator ruled out any chance of extraterrestrial action. Nick Pope, who investigated UFOs and other mysteries for the Ministry of Defense in the past, explained at the time, "Despite exotic theories about UFOs, aliens, and portals to other dimensions, I believe there's a decidedly down-to-earth explanation here. A so-called smoke vortex can arise when you have a blast through a circular structure like a smokestack. So these weird effects can be caused by accident or indeed by design. On the latter point, they can be created as some sort of pyrotechnic effect, and it would be interesting to know if there was any outdoor festivals being held in the area concerned. I realized that by debunking this, I'll probably be accused of working for the Illuminati or something, but I genuinely think that we could close the case on the file on this one." Hashtag panics take.
Yeah, so folks watching on the Jet TV there.
Yeah, you want to scroll through a couple of those photos?
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. For the folks on the radio side of things, we'll just kind of describe it. It's what you said, Bob. It's just like
It's a smoke. It is literally a black ring in the sky.
Not a full circle.
Not a full circle. It's almost like 3/4 of a horseshoe going into a circle.
Yeah.
There's a really dark half of it, and then it kind of lightens up around where the two points would meet. Or two sides would meet, circle, whatever. The two curves, right, from the base of it. I'm not a geometry person, yeah. So pardon my ignorance. But looking at it, I could tell you that is definitely not a UFO. Out of all the UFO things I've ever read, most of them aren't transparent. I've heard of them going in completely invisible, but never like part of it is translucent and the rest of it's like there. And the fact that it was hovering is interesting.
Well, to me, it kind of looks like a plane does, the you know, that when you write a message in the sky, kind of like that.
Yeah, but who's writing a message with just ooh?
And it's and it's black smoke. If it was which wouldn't be good for the plane if you see black smoke coming out of
the plane. I have. You know, I looked at this when I was looking at the article trying to figure out what exactly I'm looking at.
Yeah.
I'm going with not a UFO.
Not
a UFO or a UAP or anything like that. Like, I don't have, I don't think there's enough there to strictly call it a UFO sighting or anything.
I don't think so.
What I will say I don't think it is insects. You know, if it was a mass of insects flying through the air like the UFOologist said it might be, you would think that there'd be a lot more in the middle. But these things are like, and somebody will get this reference, it's almost like they're circle pitting, going, rotating around in a perfect circle. I've been around smokers my entire life and used to partake myself a little bit back in the day. So, and I'm familiar with what a smoke ring would look like.
Yeah.
And that is my logical explanation. Oh, I will call it a smoke ring. I'm not familiar with that area in China. Like, I'm not that person. So I can't say that there's, you know, smokestacks right there or whatnot, but I'm going with the smoke theory.
Kind of like a when Tom and Jerry and Tom and the
yeah, you would run in a circle and you would have that black, you know, and it would make sense why it would be black. I mean, it could also be a after effect of a firework. Being in China and they're a big manufacturer of fireworks, that is a big possibility. I think the UFOologist has the right answer when it comes to liking to know if there was any festivities going on that day, why you'd have it. Because the other thing is, it's not what I find interesting about the smoke ring theory is if you look at the sky, it's not dark out. You would think if you're lighting, you know, when it's dusk, but if you're lighting off fireworks that something on that caliber, you would want it to be dark outside to physically see what's going on with the firework, right?
This was a test firework or something.
It might have been a test firework. Paranormal? I don't know. It reminds me of the hoop snake, which is a fearsome critter story of a snake that is a hoop. But I don't think they fly. And I don't think there's none in China, I don't think. No. I mean, I could be wrong. But it's an interesting looking thing. What are you going with? Do you think it's a smoke or do you think there's an unexplained reason behind this?
Bob?
Yeah.
I think it's just some smoke.
Going with smoke.
I don't think it's anything paranormal.
No. And if it was, I would call it a portal. But that, you would think the portal would be a solid thing and would just dissipate all at once. I don't know. I'm not an expert in portals either, to be completely frank with you. Yeah, that's what I'm going with, and we're sticking to it.
We'll leave it at that.
All right. Remember, folks, you can call in at any point. Our phone number is 219-845-1100. That's 219-845-1100. Now, here is the next story comes to us from, and I would never in a million years thought I'd be talking about the Catholic Church back-to-back from a news article. A couple weeks back, we talked about the Catholic Church updating their exorcism policies.
Yeah.
This week, I'm bringing you a news story from the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops. Aliens or angels, some researchers say that the Vatican archives hold UFO secrets. And this is an article written by Robert Duncan, who I don't know is a bishop, so I apologize, you know, Robert Duncan, if you're a bishop, and I'm not calling you Bishop Duncan, but let's move on. A group of scientists and researchers are seeking access to the Vatican apostolic.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Archives.
I want to make sure you weren't saying apocalyptic.
No, it's apostle, but lick. Okay. And I can't get the word out of my mouth. Archives to uncover the information about UFOs and the paranormal, believing that there may be traces amid the 50 miles of shelving holding everything from handwritten PayPal notes to presidential missives. The decades-long effort gained momentum in 2023 following a U.S. intelligence official David Grush's congressional testimony alleging the Vatican's involvement with an international cover-up of alien secrets. Grush claimed that Pope Pius XII back-channeled information to the United States about a crashed UFO recovered by fascist dictator Benito Mussolini. I don't know where Grush got this information. Marco Grilli, the secretary to the prefect of the archives, told Catholic News Service on June 11th. Grilli said that the archives had received emails inquiring about the veracity of the claims, but likened them to requests to read personal letters of Pontius Pilate or the Virgin Mary. And one can laugh at it, he said. However, findings like those reported by Diana Walsh Polska's 2009 book American Cosmic suggest to UFO believers that the archives hold more than meets the eye. Polska, a religious studies professor at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, said that the archives are full of reports of paranormal events such as nuns witnessing orbs entering their cells, flying houses, and other aerial phenomena. She argues that these events might be better understood by UFO-type occurrences rather than miracles as Catholics traditionally understand them. The historical record is filled with these kind of events, she told CNS May 30th. The people at the Vatican, they don't even know where to look. It's in their basements. The Vatican archivists are in a mad rush to digitize what they have, and they prioritize what they think is most important, she explained. They aren't prioritizing really orbs that are bothering nuns in the 1800s. The interest in the Vatican's holdings extends beyond the realm of scholars of religion. Scientists like Gary Nolan, a professor of medicine at Stanford University, view the Vatican archives as a potential treasure trove of understanding UFOs and paranormal phenomena. And I quote, "The Vatican is probably the oldest library system of paranormal or supernatural knowledge still to exist," Nolan said. "The archive has an aura both of mysticism and the feeling of deep truth that if you just know how to read it, you can pull the information out." Nolan believes that if an advanced species showed up on Earth, it means that it might be possible for humans to survive threats like climate change, the energy crisis, and war. "The very fact that we think we see something, to me, is hope," Nolan said of UFO sightings. "It says something has made it past the cliff, past the decision point that we now feel we are on the edge of right now." Nolan co-founded the Soul Foundation in 2023 to spearhead scientific research into UFOs, now called UAPs, or unidentified anomalous phenomena, and to initiate dialogue with religious institutions like the Vatican about the spiritual implications of discovering alien life. The foundation is confident that at least some UFOs are genuine vehicles of non-human origin. Coincidentally, one of its interfaith dialogue to assess potential impact on other world religions. Because the Vatican facilitates interfaith dialogue and engages in religious pluralism, it's always been on our mind that it's an entity that we want to engage, Peter Scafish, the founder's direction, told CNS. Interest among non-Catholic researchers in uncovering paranormal secrets in the Vatican has spanned decades and has roots in a culturally influential retreat center in California. Father Francis Tiso, an expert on interreligious dialogue, said he discussed a plan to conduct paranormal research in the Vatican archives with the founder of the Eastland Institute over 20 years ago. Eastland, a retreat center in California known for its progressive and counterculture influence, particularly during the 60s and 70s, it continues to play a significant cultural role in the United States by attending Silicon Valley technologists, spiritual leaders, and innovators to explore new ideas in psychology, spirituality, and personal growth, which, in my opinion, is really important. Father Tiso said that Michael Murray, Eastland's co-founder, told him that someone should go to the Vatican archives, do research, examine the documentation, and try to classify it in ways that could be accessible to the scientific community. "Studying miracles attributed to the intercession of saints and possible paranormal activity," Father Tiso said, "could help build another bridge in a direction of paranormal phenomena connected with the idea of the UFO narrative, ghost narrative, etc., that somehow we human beings are in some way in contact with other civilizations or the afterlife or other conscious beings in the universe or elsewise." Jeffrey Kripal, a member of the board at Esalen and the professor of religion at Rice University in Houston, said stories of Catholic miracles are of interest to the UFO researchers because of telepathic communication, levitation, and other paranormal events that would coincide with, and I quote, "close encounters." The whole gamut of religious phenomena appears in the abduction or encounter experience, Kripal said. Carlos Iyer, a professor of history at Yale University, has studied these types of miracles that captivate researchers like Paluska and Nolan. He published his findings in a 2023 book, They Flew, A History of the Impossible. Levitations, UFOs, and miracles are all on the spectrum, let's call it the impossible things that are considered impossible or highly unlikely, he said. The Vatican archives have a high value for paranormal researchers, he said, especially because since the Renaissance, the Church has applied more rigor to alleged miracles by requiring witnesses to swear oaths that they are not lying. While the staff of the Vatican archives acknowledge that their vast shelves contain accounts of miracles, they deny that any of their holdings pertain to aliens. The Perfect wants to affirm that there is no document in the archives that regards extraterrestrial life, and scholars seeking such material at the Vatican should be dissuaded from undertaking futile and unproductive attempts in this apostolic archive, Greeley said. There's a lot to unpack there, Count. There's a lot to uncover there. So I'm going to pass it to you for your hashtag panic state.
Yeah. Well, it's always a thing, right? We just talked about the Vatican, their stance on paranormal activity, so to speak. Vatican itself may be having a lot of stories in there, it seems like. And to my knowledge, Bob, I don't think anybody's ever done an investigation, right? The Vatican, they don't allow that.
Oh, they would not.
They would not allow that.
They would not. Absolutely not.
Probably not. It's probably frowned upon to go investigating in the Vatican. But, you know, there's probably a lot of history for sure. And, you know, they don't like to go all out with probably telling folks about the exorcisms. That seems to be something they keep close to the vest there. I know we had Father Maginot couple years ago already. It was a couple years at this point talking about the Gary Dean house and his.
We had Father Maginot on the show. We have a caller.
We do.
Caller, you're on the air.
Wait, hold on.
Oh, sorry. Okay. My bad. My bad.
My train of thought. But it's very interesting that this is kind of coming out now for sure. But
yes.
Interesting. But we do have a phone call.
Take it.
Okay.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hey, welcome back, Bob.
Hey, John, I'm glad you called. An interesting time for you to call after I just got done sharing about
you
this.
You know what? You hit the nail on the head. That is an awful lot to digest. I was trying to keep up with you, but
yes. So
you know, I'm just, and while you were talking about that, I'm just wondering if the Pope, if he was listening to that, what he would think. I think he'd probably put the kibosh on that and wouldn't
100%
answer. You know, looking at any kind of archives of such sort. Maybe I'm wrong, but I mean. You know, I don't know. I mean, just I don't think that'd probably be the least. I mean, obviously, the least of his concerns, right?
Of course. I mean, it would be a how do I say this? It would be a excuse me. It'd be ignorant for us not to say that there's potentially something there, at least talking about the paranormal in some aspects, right? I'm not saying that they're going to have, you know, straight paranormal investigation research, but the Vatican at one point had the world's strongest telescope in the world on hand for themselves. You know, who's to say that they didn't discover something out there and they just never disclosed it? But you know that there's archival evidence there of, you know, miracles. There's definitely going to be some sort of research papers or something written on, you know, possession, because that's a part of, you know, one of the rites in Catholicism is the rite of exorcism, right? That's a rite, right? That's not a thing I just made up. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I would like to see it pursued, but, you know, like we talked in the past about apparitions and miracles, you know, I'm a believer of it. I think you're a believer of it. But how far in Rome are they believers that, you know, they're going to open up something that, you know, I don't know. I just don't see it happening.
What I found fascinating is that the Vatican has 50 miles of archives. Mm. Now, see, I knew that they have an extensive archive, right, of everything, but I did not know that it was 50 miles long. Wow. So you mean to tell me in all of those 50 miles that there's not one bit of information on the paranormal or supernatural? Because at some point, the Catholic Church had to sit down and come up with the concept of what is an exorcism. That blows my mind for them to say, well, it's kind of pointless to look at this because we don't have it. What do you mean you don't have it? Somebody had to have written down something. You know what I mean?
Well, I totally agree with you, but who's to say that they're going to let somebody into, you know, like I said, further their
like you and Bob.
They should listen. I might not be, I'm not the biggest practicing Catholic these days, but I did go through all of my stuff. I'm confirmed. I'm baptized. I made my communion. So in all
the Pope should call you.
The Pope should probably call me. Now, listen, Pope, I know me and you probably don't see eye to eye on a whole lot these days, but you should let me in and go look at those archives. Not that I speak Latin or I could read Latin.
He is a controversial Pope. So but you know what? At least you mentioned some people who are very interested in this and possibly will look into it further, you know.
So absolutely. And what I find fascinating is that it's not a solid no across the board, because as I was reading in the article to you guys, there are bishops and priests on site that say that there's value to this, that there's value in studying the extraterrestrial, the paranormal, the supernatural, that the Vatican definitely has archives of.
Well, I think it's about time somebody says, you know, let's not debunk this. Let's take a look at it, especially when you say they have all them, you know, them records and archives there.
50 miles worth. You know, that's a lot.
Yeah, why not open? You know, let's get somebody in there and take a look at it. But that word you're referring to is apostolic.
Apostolic. Thank you, John. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
That's all. That was a tough word. I read it, and I'm trying to get it out of my mouth. So I appreciate you helping me there.
Yeah. No problem. But yeah, we'll see what happens with that. It'd be very interesting. But once again, hey, nice to see you back, and I'm gonna listen to the rest of the show.
John, you're the best. I really appreciate you.
Yeah, appreciate you too, Bob.
We'll talk soon.
Take it easy now.
You too, sir.
Now, what about the UFO aspect, because that's something totally different now.
Now, listen, I'm I could get in a whole philosophical conversation with you right now about the idea of if we find aliens, it disproves God, because that doesn't make any sense.
Not at all.
That makes no sense. No. If you mean to tell me, okay, so let's say, and this is me just going to touch on the subject on a bare minimum, okay? So on the first day, God created the heavens and the earth, right? And I don't know what day that was, but in the beginning there was nothing, right? Yeah. And then God created something, right?
Yeah.
That's Genesis. God created something. And if you mean to tell me that God created only a singular rock with human life on it, and he didn't make anything else, or he, they, whatever you want to call God, the God as an entity, if God only created this one rock with these one people on it, you mean to tell me that there's not other civilizations out there that God created? And that's if you believe in the, you know, the singular God, if you're, you know, in the Christian belief system, which is fine if you're not. I tell you guys all the time, I'm a big proprietor in spiritual beliefs and however you want to practice. But just because you can prove these things doesn't mean that there's a lack there of God, folks. You know, science doesn't disprove religion. It just explains how things work.
Kind of like the dinosaur situation.
Exactly. Like, I don't understand fundamentalists when it comes to religion saying things that the paranormal, we don't look at that because it goes against God. How, man? It helps explain what's next. You know, if you're a scholar of religion, wouldn't you want to know, like, help figure things out on why things work other than just saying, well, God created this, and that's the end of conversation? Wouldn't you, you know, there, I know that there's scientists out there that are priests, and the Vatican works in science. I know that for a fact. So that's what I'm getting at here is, though, is if you believe that out there in the realm of the universe, outside Earth, which we prove that there is an outside Earth, right? And we prove that it's an infinite vastness, like infinitely big. Mm-hmm. And if you're, you know, and you say that God only created this one rock with this one human life on it, and there's nothing else out there, then, you know, I'm not God, so I can't explain that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
I get what you're saying.
And I'm not trying to be controversial here by any means. That's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to be controversial in case, you know, a far believer in something comes at me and says, well, Bob Anderson doesn't believe in God. I didn't say that at all.
Yeah.
I'm saying it is an interesting idea to think about why things are the way they are. And if we're not alone in the universe, let's say that Christianity exists on another planet, if that's the case, does it fall in the exact line as we have it or what? You know what I mean? That is where I find interesting.
What's the chances we get the Pope on the show?
I think he's got more important things to do.
We could do a pre-record interview.
I think he has more important things to do. Oh. We could probably... Who's our bishop right now in Northwest
McClory.
India? McClory. We could probably get him.
Bishop McClory?
Yeah. I don't think he'd appreciate being on my show.
I don't know if we'll talk about aliens.
We got Father Maginot. That's as close as I think we're going to get as far as the Catholic Church coming on the show.
I'm sure.
But anyway, you ready to move on to our last news story?
Yeah.
Okay. So our last news story comes to us from PetaPixel or PetaPixel. Mm-hmm. This is written by Fasala Bandara, PESALA. A photographer spots creepy, and I quote, ghost in a window during a prom shoot. And Count Panic, if you could bring up the photo, please.
Yes, we'll do the first one, then when we talk about...
Sounds good.
Yeah, I'll put that one.
So a photographer discovered a terrifyingly ghostly face of a woman in a window multiple times after taking photos of a prom couple outside a historic house in the U.S. In mid-April, a photographer, Tatiana Jarwin, took prom photos of her client Emma, who requested to do the shoot at the back of an old house in historic Fort Reno, Oklahoma. Fort Reno was a former military post that was the home base for the cavalry and infantry units of the United States from 1875 to 1907. She said she wanted to do photos at Fort Reno on historic Route 66 in El Reno because her stepmom works there and she always thought it was beautiful. And I had no idea what the place was, Tatiana tells Petapixel, or Petapixel, calling it Petapixel. When I pulled up, I followed them to the back corner of the property to an old house. And during the shoot, Tatiana, who runs her own photography business, Tati Snaps Photography, says that she felt she saw something in her peripheral vision. When I was taking their photos on the side of the house out of my peripheral vision, I thought I saw someone or something that was white, the Oklahoma-based photographer says. But I looked up and I didn't see anything, so I figured it was a bird or something. I didn't think it was anything creepy, but I knew that I definitely had seen something, and whether it was, I would see it when to edit the photos. However, then Emma and her family told the photographer more about the history of Fort Reno and the location that they had chosen for the prom shoot. About 5 or 10 minutes later, I was asking about what this place was because the property was really cool. Emma's dad explained it was an old military camp, Tatiana recalls. Then Emma throws out a comment about how a lady died in the house back when it was a military camp. After that, I started thinking maybe what I saw was just not a bird, but I was also telling myself, don't be crazy. Tatiana says she returned to her home immediately, uploaded the photos from her camera so she could edit the selection of her previews for Emma. However, Tatiana was stunned when she looked closely at the photos and saw a ghostly and a quote face in the window of every single photo taken at the site of the old house. I was getting some sneak peeks edited for Emma. Then I saw photos taken on the side of the house in frozen shock, the photographer says. I then yelled for my husband and showed him every single photo, and we were just both in awe on how clearly you could see a face and how the face shape doesn't change. But you can see it look one way, then back the other way in some photos, and the face is closer to the window and more defined. Then in others, the face is further and less noticeable. Tatiana's creepy photos went viral online after a client shared images of the ghostly face in a TikTok video that amassed 10.7 million views and thousands of comments. Tatiana says that she still does not know what to make of the face in her photos. However, the photographer believes that she may have captured a ghost of a woman who died in the house with her camera that day. I still think I captured the soul of the spirit of the lady who passed away in the house, she explains. But sometimes the more logical side of me comes out and thinks maybe there's just some dust or grime on old windows that looks like a face and moves directions. I'm really unsure how to feel about it. The photographer is aware that there will be people who will be skeptical about the images and their authenticity. So many people commenting thinking the face in the window is either edited or it's clouds, tree shadows, torn curtains, or spray paint, Tatiana says. But there are lots of people who believe it like I do. And that's it. So let's take a look at some of these photos.
So let's see. So now this is the two main ones here. So this is what I had shown.
I'm scrolling up here and looking.
You see this? It looks like a normal prom photo, right, to you?
Yeah. And couple. Yes.
But then look at this. What is that? It's a face.
Okay. Now, if I didn't tell you it was a face... Are we matrixing it into being a face? Matrixing meaning that we look at clouds in the sky and we make shapes out of it. It definitely looks like a face.
Two eyes and a forehead.
And you can see the nose and the mouth. And she said it kind of moves between the photos.
Yeah. But like, what do you think it is?
I think she caught something.
I think it's a ghost.
I really do. What are you gaining from that? I mean, yeah, I guess her photography is being promoted as such, but come on, man. You know, when you're a professional photographer and you're doing this kind of a thing, anytime somebody has a paranormal experience, you always take the risk of being called, you know, a fraud or crazy or something, and you might do damage to your reputation from that.
Yeah.
So, you know, you come forward and do that. I mean, it's a gamble, but like, what does it pay off if it doesn't? I mean, the face moves. There's definitely some history to the house. I mean, I could kind of see in the photo with just the gentleman in the hat. That one's a little bit more farther down there, Colin, if you can bring that up. I think it's the last photo on the list.
I got to find it.
Yep. The last photo on the list shows the gentleman standing in front of the wall. Great photo, by the way. But you can see the face again. This time it's a little bit more faint, and it moved. So, like, almost like the neck turned and it's facing the camera at all times. You know, I'd be hard. Last photo on the list there, Count. It's him standing right against there. The wall. Yeah, there's another one.
Oh, okay. Well, look at there.
Yeah, there's the one you're showing is another one. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would be worth seeing if there has been an investigation done there by an actual paranormal investigation team and not just photographer. To see if there's something going on there that can't be explained. I'm going with she caught the real deal here, man. And keep in mind, when I do these conversations and we have these talks, I always provide both sides to the story. I believe that there's an actual paranormal entity, or what could this be? What could it be? It's matrixing. I'm saying there's a face, and now all of you are saying it's a face. You could say it's a curtain or some smoke. I don't call it clouds. That makes no darn sense. I guess you can say that she edited that in, but that looks too natural to be edited in, you know? So I'm going with she caught the real thing. What do you think?
I think, Bob, it does look like something real to me. I mean, it's just kind of something that's hard to explain as we take one last look at it there. And there's no mannequin on the other side or anything.
No, there's
like
not.
No dirty window maybe possibly there too. I'm not sure. But, yeah, I think it's something paranormal, Bob.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, Count, you ready to take a quick break?
Sure.
All right. Count Panic, I'm going to be taking a quick break for our live audience at home. Stay tuned. I'll be right back. And for our podcast fans, stick around. You're about to be hearing words from a show that you should be listening to. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Ghostly.
Pat, what are you doing?
What? I want people to know that we're a podcast that takes a deep dive into some of the scariest ghost stories.
But we don't do the creepy voices or weird sound effects. We debate the ghost stories. And aren't you supposed to be the skeptic?
I am, but they'll find that out once they listen.
Look, all you have to do is tell them to listen to Ghostly, and that our listeners get to decide which stories are real.
And which stories are just old folklore.
Exactly.
Download Ghostly wherever you find great podcasts.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, hey there, Count Panic.
Oh, hey, Bob.
What did you do during break?
During the break, Bob, you would find it hard to believe I called the Pope.
Oh, what did the Pope do?
Said he's busy.
I figured as much.
Said maybe next year.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year.
Maybe next year. That was good.
What did you do during break?
You know what I did during break, Count? I went outside. I had a non-alcoholic pina colada, and I sat out in a hammock and watched the sunset.
Did you get caught in the rain?
No, but I did get eaten alive by mosquitoes.
Oh, that happens.
That happens.
Hey, Bob, somebody brought this to my attention, too. Let me know if you think this is paranormal.
Sure.
Actually, a few people referenced this, I noticed, on social media, too, as well. A lack of lightning bugs. Paranormal or not?
No, I think that's just something to do with the ecosystem.
Oh, okay.
I will say that Vix actually just reported she saw lightning bugs last week.
I have yet to see a lightning bug.
It's been weird here. I mean, but Vix has seen them, so they exist out there.
Growing up, though, they were all
over the place. I mean, how often are you outside in the, like, parkier areas seeing these things? You know what I mean?
Just be outside in the cityscapes.
Well, you know, they retreat. The more we populate and pollute things, the more nature kind of moves away from that.
Okay, so it's more of an environmental
thing. I'm going with environmental thing. I wouldn't say it's a paranormal
I thought maybe
thing.
There was something creepy.
I don't know if there's a lightning bug vampire or something.
Yeah, someone's stealing all the lightning bugs.
Right.
Yeah. Something to look into, Bob.
I would say so. All right, Count Panic, you ready to have a conversation about a snake woman?
Snake woman.
A snake woman. The Ayatara.
Oh, okay.
The Ayatara. It is from Finnish folklore. A-J-A-T-A-R. I will tell you that there's not a ton of information on this creature. But
she is a snake woman.
She's a snake woman.
Not to be confused with like a Medusa type character.
It is not it's Medusa-esque, okay. But not Medusa. No, this is from Finnish folklore. So in Finnish folklore, the Ayatara is also, it has different spellings and different abbreviations, is an evil female spirit. In Finnish folklore, she lives in the woods in the mountains located next to Pohjola, Pohjola. She is described as having hair that reaches to her heels and chest that hung down to her knees, similar to the Swedish Skognuva, or the Danish sea woman. This creature is the granddaughter or the offspring of the Hisi, H-I-I-S-I. They are the master of the woods and the spreader of diseases, and is the master of Lempo and gnomes. Lempo is a type of creature in Finnish folklore. And through her connections with these creatures, she is said to be able to spread disease and pestilence herself. She is closely associated with serpents and is often depicted in modern art as a dragon or half-humanoid and serpentine figure. The word is possibly derived from the Finnish word ajahata, or to pursue, or also to drive. And that feminine suffix tar appears in several Finnish names, including a variation of Lohi and Sojatara. In the name may have roots in Ikea time as well, and from where Aratara would be an equally regular derivative, or both. So, in essence, there is this creature who is depicted as a half-woman, half-snake, who is the spreader of disease, chaos, and carnage. And her job, if she hangs out in the woods and waits for a hunter to catch up to her, and if she catches the hunter, she may eat them alive, and then in other ones, she'll slither and sit on the hunter's chest, causing them nightmares that she then feeds off of. Okay. So there's two different versions of the lore when it comes to her. The one being that she kind of just wanders through the woods spreading pestilence and disease. Which disease and pestilence? I don't know. You just kind of tell me. It could be the common cold for all I know. Or she is the bringer of nightmares. There's not too much known about her, but I think it was worth bringing up and having a little bit of a conversation with. Excuse me, are you still there?
I'm still there with you.
All right. She is said to mislead hunters into the forest. On the other hand, she is said to sit on sleeping people's chests to cause nightmares. And then it is also says that she kind of exists just to be a nuisance in the woods. Not to cause any real harm, but just to be a pain in the neck, moving around trails or knocking trees down just to cause people to get more lost. So there is, she is the evil counterpart to the maiden of the forest, or the Miliki, the M-I-E-L-I-K-K-I. And it is thought to be good, and the ones that you catch can give you, protects you in the forest, while the Arahara is the one who makes you get lost and causes all kinds of harm. So when we look at the balance of the good and evil, or the light and the dark, you have the maiden of the forest, and you have the serpentine of the forest, which would be the evil. And it's interesting because when we look at, you know, we were just talking about Catholicism a little bit ago in Christianity, the concept of the snake comes back all the way in the story of Genesis when we're talking about Adam and Eve, correct? And the snake comes into the tree of life, yada, yada. I don't need to tell you that story. Everybody knows it. Yeah. But it's interesting to me that even during the Finnish folklore, we see that this creature is also a snake in the woods that would then proceed to cause harm and chaos. This is the only explanation, though, because there isn't much information about her. There is some things about the forgotten female goddesses and spirits in Finnish mythology. It told that the role of them has been much more important than current knowledge lets us to understand. But the focus of research has been made in the male gods and spirits. And when it comes to this particular female, there isn't much recorded information about her at all. Some believe that these stories of her are just straight fictional and made up completely and were never really passed down. Which is what I find interesting, though, is that during the Christian occupation of that neck of the woods, Nova Scotia, Finland, etc., etc., during that time, they start implementing things like the Christianity into the Finnish folklore. So in the original Finnish version of the Bible, the original print of the Bible in Finland, mm-hmm. they reference this creature in the version of the Bible, but not as the creature that I'm describing here, but as a generic word for demon or evil spirit. Mm-hmm. So in the Finnish version of the original version of the Bible, it refers to the Aradara as this just what I would say is like the devil or demon here. They just used it as a general word.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm waiting for you to catch up to speed.
Okay, a general word.
A general word to describe an evil spirit. I find it interesting that we don't have a lot of information on her, mm-hmm. but when people find out the little bits and pieces that we know about her, there are so many interesting images and iconology behind her that we see. Some people depict her as a woman wearing a boned mask, something very pagan-like. Mm-hmm. Some depict her more as like a plague doctor almost, and then some depict her as a half woman, half snake. Usually the snake part's always at the bottom. So she has the torso of a beautiful woman and then the snake comes out underneath. The spreading of disease and pestilence is interesting because I've not found a story of this creature outside the woods. So if she is the bringer of pestilence and disease, who is she passing the disease and pestilence onto? And if you believe in the stories of the Forest Maiden, if she exists just to antagonize the good one, is she bringing spreading disease and pestilence to trees and wildlife? You know, my question to you, Count Panic, is when these stories were first being passed around in Finnish folklore many centuries ago, you know, probably before you were even born there, Count.
Centuries.
Did the original people of that neck of the woods use the depiction of her to describe decaying trees?
Yeah, that's a good question.
So that's my question to you. What do you think?
Very well. So I mean, it kind of like shapes up to be quite the thing. But really, if you were the secret here, Bob, is just don't go in the woods. Correct?
Yes, Cow Panic. You should not go in the woods
because then be a snake woman waiting for you, and then it's all downhill from there. But yeah, I get the point, the reference of the trees as well.
Yes. So I was referencing the Skogstra from Sweden a little bit ago, and I wanted to tell you guys a little bit about that too, because it's interesting. Swedish and Finland, and they're not the same country, but they do share similar things, very similar. And so let me read you guys the story of the Skogstra. So this particular creature is considered a forest nymph and is a mythical feature that's found in Swedish folklore. It appears in the form of small, beautiful woman with a seemingly friendly temperament. She also appears as a woman from the front, but seen from behind, she often has a tail and a hollow back or skin like tree bark. Those who are enticed into following her in the forest are never seen again. It was said that any human man who met up with her, I'm sure you guys could read between the lines, became an introvert as his soul had remained with her. And if the man is a hunter that met up with her, he may be rewarded with good luck in the hunt, but should be but if he should ever be unfaithful to the creature, he will be punished with numerous accidents. He may put an end to a stormy night caused by her vengeance by firing a shot against her. Late folklore in Finland describes silver bullets as an effective means to kill the Skogstra. So I'm curious where the silver bullets come in. They say that's in, late folklore in Finland and Sweden. You got to use the silver bullets to kill.
That's a common thing back then.
Yes. The story of this creature that I'm referring to dates back many long time ago, and one of the earliest actual artist depictions was in an 1882 book called the Svenska Folkungar, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing that, butchering that completely bad, because I speak German, but I don't speak Swedish. It's a little different.
A little off.
So that's SVENSKAFOLKSAGNER. So these stories go back way long time ago, but it's interesting because we don't have any information, and I'm curious why we don't. I'm assuming that if the story survived that long, that people didn't create these things recently, there's got to be more written text about them or some kind of spoken word or written. And if that's the case, back when we were knocking over my water bottle here, going back here, and we were talking about that research saying that they were pumping more research into the male figures in Finnish folklore, how come we're not putting more of a spotlight and doing more research on these, you know, these female creatures? Because
why is that, Bob?
I don't know. I'm pitching it to you as a question.
Well, I don't know as well. I mean, you'd think they'd be just as important as the counterparts there, but I never heard. I mean, I've heard the story about silver bullets, and of course, a lot of
werewolf lore, yeah,
werewolves and whatnot. But for this entity itself, which I have never heard what to begin with, it's kind of weird that it's just a similar way to take them out, right?
Yes, yeah. It reminds me of the. It's similar to the extent of, women leading men out to the woods to their death. Yeah. Back to the Yukiona
like a
from,
mermaid, right?
What?
Like a mermaid.
Like the mermaid, but in the Yukiona lore from the yokai in Japan, she was the frost maiden that would lure men in the woods by kind of mimicking baby cries and whatnot. So not the same thing. But I find it interesting that these stories, a lot of the stories kind of relate back to the same general concept that there's a woman in the woods that are leading men to their deaths. And
why do we always fall?
And that's my question. Not why we fall for it. obviously that answer is easily explainable. James from Peoria, if he's listening right now, is getting a chuckle from that because he knows why you would go into the woods after something like that.
Yeah.
Were these stories passed around to scare hunters? Like when we talk about the fearsome critter lore with lumberjacks here in America, were these stories initially passed around to scare people, like a quick, prank? Or why did these stories originate?
Maybe wives started it so their husbands.
So their husbands weren't screwing around. Exactly. I mean, there's always a potential for that. But it's interesting that I just named three countries in the world that all have a similar story about a womanly figure that comes in and, lures men to their death. I just find that fascinating that, you don't hear stories of sure there is male figures, but as far as this prominent female presence luring men to their death, I think that's interesting.
You can learn a lot from these stories.
Stay out of them woods.
Or if you're on a boat and right, if you're the voice of a mermaid or the singing of a mermaid.
We need to revisit the mermaid story again because we haven't done that one in a hot minute.
That's a big episode.
So we'll have to go back and do that one again. But Count, I'm actually not in pain for the first time in a while ending
that?
The show, so why don't we call it here?
You're feeling good.
Just in case, because I don't want to jinx myself in a little bit and start feeling pain. But
I think we covered a lot.
Not a ton of story on the creature, but it's things like that. It's like there's enough there to where I can cover it and it kind of makes sense to talk about it on, a big portion of the show versus tiny little tidbits. I like these things. And I mean, I wish I could do more, but the show's an hour long. That's why I kind of picked some longer news articles. Yeah. It'd just be like that sometimes.
And it'd be like that sometimes.
Yeah. Do you have any closing words for our audience?
Programming note, I guess. I know if you're listening to podcasts, you're like, well, what's going on there on the radio? I thought there would be more, maybe some sports coverage during the summer months with baseball and whatnot. And we've had some, but nothing overbearing on us. So
are we on the radio tonight?
We're on the radio tonight. If you hear us on the radio.
No kidding. Hey, what's going on, radio audience? I had no idea.
Oh, you were on the radio too, Bob. If you hear us on the radio, that's cool. If you watch us on the Jet TV, that's cool. If you're listening on the podcast, that's cool. Listen, I don't know how you get your Bob After Dark, just as long as you get it, correct, Bob?
That is the perfect way of doing it.
Yeah.
All right, folks, thank you for watching and listening to another episode of Bob After Dark. I just want to wish all of my children of the night out there sweet dreams, and to my mom, I want to wish you a comfortable sleep after a very long medical day. To Tiff, no matter where you are in the world, I hope you have the sweetest dreams in them all. And to my father, Haven't had a chat about this since Father's Day because we were kind of back and forth on the schedule. So this is a very post Father's Day thing. But hey, Dad, wherever you are in the universe, I hope you're comfortable, happy, doing whatever it is that you want to be doing. I miss you every day, and I love you still tremendously. You're best dad in the entire world, and I couldn't thank you enough for being a part of my life then and even now that you're still teaching me lessons, even though you're in the great beyond veil. All right, children of the night, good night, everybody. And remember, there's two most important rules of Bob After Dark are not all who wander are lost, and as above, so below. Until next time.
Memoriam Development.